Welcome to Under the Dome, the State Journal Register podcast about Illinois state government and politics. I'm editor Angie Muse, and I'm here with State House reporter Doug Finke and political writer Bernie Schoenberg. Well, Doug, a bit of controversy this week in the State House with Sam McCann's feud with the GOP gets even more heated.
Even more heated in the sense that he filed a lawsuit in federal court against Senate Republican leader Bill Brady and against the state Republican Party because he said they have cut off his access to Senate resources that he needs to be able to do his job and serve his constituents. The basis of this is that all the caucuses in both the House and Senate have staffers who assist lawmakers in preparing bills and getting their bills through the legislative process. They both have press staffs that do press releases for people and otherwise get communications out to lawmakers' constituents. McCann said that he has been cut off from access to the Senate Republican staff for those kind of services ever since he said announced that he wants to run for governor on a conservative party ticket, which has yet to be formed. He said he resigned his position as a leadership post on a committee for the Senate Republicans, but he did not resign from the Senate Republican caucus. That is not the way that Bill Brady has interpreted it. He thinks that McCann has resigned as a member of the Senate Republicans and therefore is not entitled to these services.
It's pretty funny. One of the examples used in the lawsuit is something that Senator McCann had mentioned earlier when he started complaining about this and said he might do a lawsuit, is that there was a group of Girl Scouts from his district. They came, and the photographer, who you know generally takes pictures of the Republican members with their visitors, claimed she was told, no, you can't take a picture of the senator and the Girl Scouts. So he was talking about that. The lawsuit
talk about
also,
an issue. Talk about a lesson in politics that maybe they weren't quite expecting
right.
on their trip to the Capitol.
Yeah. So you know the people on the Republican side say, hey, he can still vote. That's what they sent him here to do. You know, we didn't send him here to get pictures, but Sam McCann says this is part of the constituent service people come to expect. My people are having a taxation without representation. It's also interesting he brought some of his longer standing grievances against the governor into the lawsuit because it does mention how the governor had told him he would destroy him if he voted against Bruce Rauner a couple years ago on a labor issue, which allowed our arbitration to try to settle a contract the state has that's still at impasse with AFSCME, the largest state workers union. The governor, when asked about that by me, laughed and denied that he ever said it.
You know, he does have an interesting point to be made here. Is both Republicans and Democrats in both the House and Senate have budgets to carry on this legislative business, and it runs to millions of dollars. And again, these people, this allows them to hire staff that provide all kinds of assistance to lawmakers. If you don't have access as either a Democrat or a Republican to these kind of staff services, what are you supposed to do? And, you know, his position is that taxpayers in his district are paying taxes, a certain part of which go to pay for these legislative operations, and he can't get any benefit out of it.
Right, and it just simply hasn't been an issue to this point because we don't have any third party or independent members at the, you know, until he announced
point,
his
yeah.
prospective
so,
bid.
Some years ago, James Meeks was an independent, elected as an independent, but quickly joined the Democratic caucus, so we haven't seen it happen. But yeah, he does have an interesting issue, but we'll see how it plays out. So far, last I saw, he still had either a legislative aide or secretary working in his office at the State House. So, but I did hear him say he's not sure how long that goes on, but so far that's okay. And there's some view that I've heard expressed why are the Republicans doing this, cutting him off from the photographer, for example, if it then makes him a martyr and lets him do this lawsuit? Hard to say where this goes. I did hear comments Jason Derrickman made, state senator from Bloomington, Republican, saying, you know, it's clear what Sam wants to do. Everything he's doing running for governor now against our incumbent governor is designed to hurt the Republicans. Sam McCann, of course, would not agree to that, but it's just going to be an interesting, contentious issue.
Well, yes. And one of the other interesting sidelights of this is the lawyers who filed this lawsuit on his behalf are connected with labor unions. And this kind of plays into the Republican theme on this, that Rauner, or that McCann is basically being put up to this by the labor, by Democrats, in order to divert votes away from Rauner.
And what McCann says is that Operating Engineers 150, which is also the group that gave him like $50,000 recently, they have Democrats and Republicans, and so you know, they all get to express their opinions and have given to Republicans before.
Well, it'll be interesting, and you know, of course, this is the month where he's having to ramp it up, because in June is the deadline for the very high burden of trying to have 25,000 signatures to get on the ballot, which, you know, as Doug has noted, will certainly be challenged when they are turned in.
It's a very high bar. There have been lawsuits in the past against Illinois' system that allows statewide candidates for these offices, Democrat or Republican established parties, to only have 5,000 valid signatures, third party or independents, 25,000. And the laws are very severe if you've ever watched one of these hearings where signatures or pages of petitions are challenged. If you didn't do it exactly right, you may well lose those signatures. It's really hard to do it right. That's why most candidates try to collect twice the number they need to turn in, hoping that if there is an objection filed, that they will survive with at least that threshold.
And further complicating this, and I think you brought this up before, is if somebody passed a petition for a Democrat or a Republican for the primary, they cannot now pass a petition for McCann to create this third party. So you have a certain number of activists out there who are willing to pass petitions are not eligible to do it in this case.
Right, although regular voters who sign petitions for the primary are able to sign these petitions as well, I've been told, through state law and people at the State Board of Elections.
Well, moving on, news this week, the ongoing issue about the veterans' home in Quincy and what needs to be done to fix it. The Rauner administration put out a new report. Doug, what are they saying now needs to happen?
Basically, that we need a new facility, and I'm not sure that there was really anything in this report that was surprising, except they've come up with a yet another number for the cost of this thing. But ultimately, what they said is, in the short term, they need to buy a unused private nursing home facility that's near the veterans' home, house these veterans in that while a new permanent facility is constructed. The price tag for this is now about $240 million, I think, on the upper reaches. And, you know, everyone, I think, agrees that this is probably a worthwhile project, but $240 million is a lot of money to put into one single project when you know, the state is struggling with all sorts of other capital needs.
But when you have dozens of veterans being sickened and dying from Legionnaires' disease, and, you know, it has come back, they haven't had deaths in a couple of years, but there have still been cases.
Right.
I think it becomes very hard politically to argue that we need to wait on this or hold off. Or
everybody seems to be saying, including a Democrat who's been active in this, Tom Cullerton, state senator from the suburbs, you know, just let us know how much money you need, administration, and we're ready to do what we can to get it to you quickly. And so it's been a continuing question and back and forth, and obviously there's politics involved too. The loss of, I guess, 13 lives at the facility since 2015, you know, puts a point on it. So we'll see what happens. About the politics.
Right, it flared up again this week.
It flared up again this week because the news organization that first really put a spotlight on what was happening at Quincy by highlighting, I think it was 10 or 11 families who were suing the state over deaths at the facility, WBEZ, Public Radio in Chicago. They released this week an email that it said they took them 4 months to get in asking the administration, and it was from Darlene Sanger, who was a top aide. She's a former legislator, then became a top aide to Governor Rauner. Now she has left the state post, and she is the Republican nominee for Illinois Comptroller. But her email early in this in situation that became known as a crisis at the Quincy Veterans Home about Legionnaires' disease, her email said, "We can maybe tie this back to Duckworth." Tammy
referring
Duckworth.
To Senator Tammy Duckworth, referring the U.S. senator who at one point headed the state Veteran Affairs.
Under Rod Blagojevich, and I guess she left around 2009, so maybe it was into Pat Quinn, too. I can't remember exactly. And, of course, you know, the Legionnaires outbreak wasn't known until some years after that. So as of the day we record this on Thursday, Susana Mendoza, the comptroller running against Darlene Sanger now, is joined by people including J.B. Pritzker, the candidate for governor, and a couple of veterans in the legislature. It mentions Representative Linda Chapalavia, U.S. Army veteran, and Representative Stephanie Kifowit, who is a U.S. Marine veteran. And they're in Chicago demanding that Darlene Sanger apologize for trying to blame this situation on, you know, Tammy Duckworth, who is herself a disabled veteran who was severely injured, you know, when her helicopter was shot down. Okay. So it's both sides on the political spectrum are
hear a lot about this between now and November, and then, you know, on the legislative side, the question's just how to, as Doug said, come up with the money. Speaking of the legislative side, it seems like most of the talk in the past few days has been about things that aren't happening for various reasons.
Which is not necessarily unusual or a small list for the General Assembly. There was a hearing on Wednesday regarding a resolution that is backed by House Speaker Michael Madigan saying that the state endorses the idea of bringing a graduated state income tax to Illinois in place of the flat tax that we have now. It is only a resolution. It is too late to get an amendment on the ballot this year to bring a graduated income tax to the state, and that ultimately is what it's going to take.
Right. The question would have to go before voters for their approval.
Right, because it's written into the Constitution now that we have a flat tax. But, of course, J.B. Pritzker, the Democratic nominee for governor, and, in fact, all the Democrat candidates for governor endorsed the idea of a graduated income tax. And Madigan in the past has supported the idea of a surtax on millionaires to bring in more money for the state. So this is a way to show that they are providing some support for the idea of the graduated tax.
Governor Rauner has been very clear, crystal clear, I think he would say more than once, that he thinks taxing more is not the solution. It will crush small business. It will drive job creators out of the town, even if it's a graduated income tax. Where the Democrats are arguing, as Mike Madigan did in a very short video he put out this week, that you know, you can structure a progressive income tax so that it works for the middle class, not millionaires and billionaires like Bruce Rauner and Donald Trump or something like that. In other words, you can structure it so most people pay less, as a new study by a more
Center
labor
for tax and budget accountability.
Yeah. Right. So, they came out saying, yeah, most people could pay less under certain scenarios, and only the richest people would pay more. Rauner says in other states, you know, you can look at examples where they say that, but then it doesn't happen and everybody gets hurt. Plus, if the job creators leave, our jobs leave, et cetera, et cetera. So you've got a very bright line so far between the Democrats and Republicans. Arguing about something, as we said, won't happen this year anyway, but is a big part of the fight between J.B. Pritzker.
I was going to say, I would say this will easily be one of the top three campaign issues we hear about, for sure.
Rauner's people will say they want to raise your taxes, and Pritzker and his people will say we want fairer taxes, and it'll help most of you.
And
people will have to decide who they believe through that clutter of commercials on TV and, of course, on our website.
And Pritzker has not laid out any specifics of a plan for a graduated tax.
Right. He has not said what his brackets would be what his rates would be.
And I'm not sure that would necessarily be a good idea for him to do that. But at the same time, as long as he hasn't laid it out, he opens himself up to criticism that anybody could be hurt at any income level with this idea.
Then another topic that a lot of people say they want, which is changing the way the legislative districts are drawn, you know, to make it less partisan. A lot of people say they like this idea, but that's another thing that's not going anywhere.
Yeah, so the deadline basically is passed to put proposed constitutional amendments on the ballot. They have to do that 6 months before the election. That takes it to the first week in May, which is this week. And both the House and Senate had to act by that time to put something on the ballot. Neither one of them did. So once again, the so-called Fair Maps idea is not going to be done by lawmakers, which is not necessarily surprising. They're certainly the political powers kind of prefer the current system where they sit behind closed doors and draw out maps and select or create as many safe districts for their party members as possible.
Yeah. And the idea of doing a legislative route had come about after a couple unsuccessful attempts at citizen petitions that were knocked out in the courts.
Are we definitely done with citizens? I'm not sure of this. I don't know if citizens petition can still be done for the November, because I saw something online, but I apologize. I don't know more. But, you know, there may be people
at
are saying at least
legislatively
it's you can't
yeah it. The legislature itself can't do it, but there might yet be another way, but we'll check that.
All right. And the governor again talking about term limits this week, but you know, no real movement on that one either.
Same thing. I mean, certainly House Speaker Michael Madigan has not ever been a fan of term limits. He basically argues that term limits, you know, the lawmakers face term limits anytime they stand for election. So we don't need an artificial limit on how long they can serve. And pretty much as long as he remains in his position, it probably is not going to come out of the legislature.
And with politicians in general being as unpopular as they are, the governor will continue to say, we need term limits. Look at all those people who have ruined the state. He's like 3 years the governor now, but he's still the new guy on the block as he campaigns
Right.
And so he will say, we need term limits.
Yeah.
We need term limits. Those guys are blocking it, and he'll say it a lot.
Those rascals.
I would say top five, definitely in the top 10 issues we'll be hearing. And, you know, I did just glance at the calendar, and as a public service, the general election is 6 months away on Sunday.
You know, eventually it will get here.
November 6th.
What talk about after that?
Only 6 months to go. Meanwhile, the legislature comes back, both chambers next week, Doug, where it's May, and technically, it hasn't happened for the last couple of years, but technically, we're supposed to pass a budget by the end of May.
Correct. And after the budget impasse that lasted for 2+ years and all the criticism the lawmakers took about that, my sense is that there is a feeling among both parties to try to get this resolved relatively on time. I mean, it's never been unusual for the General Assembly to maybe go a day or two past the deadline, although it takes additional votes to pass after that. So I think there's a lot of incentive to get it done by the 31st so they can get it. They don't need the additional votes to enact something. The argument has always been if there is a political advantage to be had by one party or the other for going back into an impasse or an overtime, they might try to engineer that. But I have yet to hear anybody explain exactly which party would benefit from that among voters.
I am still having a hard time seeing that anything the Democrats pass on their own without some kind of agreement with the governor, and there's still not a lot of meetings going on that we know of between the four leaders and the governor. There have been like two in the last year. That the governor would approve that. The budget that he proposed, including pushing off hundreds of millions of dollars in costs to local school districts to pay their pension costs that the state now pays, the legislature clearly is not going to go for that, or certainly seems like it they won't. So for the governor in this time where he keeps saying Mike Madigan and the Democrats are corrupt to agree to a budget at first without them having to pass it over a veto and then maybe get some Republican votes again to override may be difficult. We'll see how it goes.
I mean, and that's the one thing I've heard as a possibility why the governor might want to veto this is because it kind of reinforces his position or the image he wants as the budget fighter and the fiscal conservative and what have you. At the same time, the Republicans in the House who defected last year and helped pass a budget are still there. And
many of them don't face re-election because they've opted not to run again.
Correct. So they have nothing to lose, and I'm not sure that their attitudes have have changed any greatly since last year. If the Democrats don't produce something that is totally out of whack, I would think that they would probably be on board with passing a budget.
Well, we'll see what happens. Going against the governor for Republicans would still be, I think, tense and difficult and not fun, especially in an election year when, you know, even those defecting budget Republicans would want a Republican governor, I would say, as opposed to a Democrat taking over.
Going back to the pre-impasse days, Doug, you know, from your experience seeing there, you know, obviously 2017, 2016, 2015 were unusual, to say the least. You know, where are we compared to where they've been in the past first week of May, you know, in terms of getting progress on a budget?
Well, there are working groups, I guess, is the term that they're using. So we've got representatives from the House and Senate, Republicans and Democrats, all four caucuses, working together to try to reach some kind of middle ground. I don't know that they're necessarily behind schedule. I've talked to some members of this group who... I mean, there's some certain partisanship going on that the Republicans still want a revenue estimate adopted, so that becomes the baseline for determining how much you can spend. That hasn't happened yet, but from other people I've talked to, they think the negotiations are going reasonably well at this point. There's still a month, which is an eternity in the General Assembly to get something done. So
somewhere I have a T-shirt. It's not all that unusual in the past, although under Governor Rauner, the two-year impasse clearly busted all the records. But I have a T-shirt somewhere. I survived the session of 85. I think they went a couple weeks over or something, which was considered completely crazy. I know one time during Jim Edgar's terms, I think it was 17 days. How can you do that? And when Blagojevich was completely fighting with the legislature, oh my God, he called them. He said they were spending like drunken sailors, and everybody thought, how outrageous. Can you speak about the legislature? We've seen some worse, but they didn't clean up a budget that year until just before the Democratic National Convention started, I think in late July or early August. So it has gone far in the past. We'll see what the politicians and the public can stand for or will be made to stand for this year as they try to work it out in the last year of Governor Rauner's first term.
And with that, we will keep you posted next week when we return with Under the Dome on what's happening with the budget and all the other issues that may unfold in the coming week. Thanks for listening. You can find us on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher. If you have an Alexa, just ask it to play Under the Dome. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.